Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGBM Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. It's time for Desert Oracle Radio Replay. I'm Roxana, and I hope you had a good week and maybe even got to enjoy that full moon Saturday. Along with our summer days, I hope you're enjoying the thunderstorms that pass through, too. Just be careful of those lightning strikes. You know, the landslides at Bridger Bowl, the shooting at Anaconda, a helicopter crash in the Horseshoe Hills, and a parachute death in Flathead County are just a few of the stories in our local headlines this week. Death and calamity affects each of us sooner or later. That's why I believe we do our best to cherish our lives, friends, and the world around us every day. And I hope this show sparks a little of that for you, and maybe some wonder too. And I hope you're appreciating little unexpected gifts, like the bowl of Saskatoon soup my husband just cooked and brought to me. Oh, man, it was good. Well, Ken Lane was doing some deep thinking when he was visiting Moab, Utah. So from April 8th, 2022, here is Pinyon Jays Know Why They're Alive.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. And tonight's show is coming to you from KZMU-FM in Moab, Utah, because it's the 30th anniversary of that particular station, heard in Moab in the Castle Valley. But we are broadcasting all over the American Southwest, like always, on Friday nights from our home base, Z1077 FM in Joshua Tree, Yucca Valley, 29 Palms, and the whole Mojave High Desert. Where are you tonight? Maybe you're sitting in the kitchen, the only light coming from the radio dial and the end of a cigarette. Or maybe you're driving a two-lane through the high desert, just you and the jackrabbits. Maybe you're in the garage with the radio on. Or maybe you're walking in the dark with headphones on. Don't listen too loud. You might never hear that mountain lion coming. Actually, you won't hear it anyway. I spend a lot of time hanging around garages at night. Usually in the big open doorway, open to the great unknown night. The radio on the workbench. The fluorescent lights flickering, the smell of motor oil and work uniforms. Auto garages and industrial shops. Rehearsal spots and those metal buildings we put up in the country. Bigger than most people's houses. With work benches and pegboard on the walls. And all sorts of arcane tools and equipment. Some old snowshoes, maybe. Hanging up there by the drain snake and the pipe bender. A place to escape from the noisy and tiresome daytime world. There's something about stories around a fire. I was doing some campfire stories the other night in Green River on this beautiful little beach. Campfires and coolers and everything. And a nice part of that sort of show was afterwards you just mingle around and talk to people. And a lot of people have interesting stories, interesting experiences. Because I've been talking about the wilderness and murder and monsters and God and all that. People feel sort of free to be a little weird, a little bit more interesting. I pick up all kinds of wild stories that way. Everybody's watching the night sky for oddities. And I am enjoying the fellowship of my fellow desert lovers, wilderness lovers, escapees and oddballs. And then sometimes somebody will come up and blurt out something weird. Not weird in the story way, but just weird. But usually I just excuse myself, gotta see a man about a dog, that kind of thing. Fade into the night. Then I overhear somebody talking about search page autocomplete. And what happens when you type my name in there? And did that mean anything? Well, that's the unintentional danger of trying to keep your personal circumstances out of your public work. People want to know everything about everybody because it's usually just a Google search away. Whether you're a private citizen or Chris Rock or Dolly Parton or the Pope, you can find out their whole deal. Net worth, how many times they've been sued, where they live, and how much the house costs. The names of their dogs and children and personal trainers. And of course their line of branded beauty products and lingerie. Because it's all volunteered, it's all grist for the content mill. And once everybody knows way too much about you, there's hardly any point to doing any work in public at all. But then you might end up like Moab's own Edward Abbey, who, when brought up today, if people know who he is at all, well, they launch right into, well, he's a bad, problematic person because I read on Wikipedia that he was married 28 times and he drank 5 beers on this one night. And he doesn't completely match my political and social positions in the year 20 and 22, half a century after his literary peak, 30 plus years after he died. I love not having any idea about people. A big thing we used to wonder about as kids is whether that was somebody's real name, whether somebody cool was secretly gay or a junkie, you know? Because it was not revealed. You hardly knew if people were dead or alive, even as everybody played their records or read their books. Singers with English accents who wound up being from Ohio. There were people you loved who you despised if you spent 5 minutes hearing them talk in person at a party. I especially appreciate not knowing anything about the interesting creative people. The less we know about somebody's personal situation, the better. Because everybody's personal problems are all the same. All the same and incredibly boring. I'll get about 2 pages into a Vanity Fair profile or whatever, and sometimes I fall asleep or fall over and hit my head on the kitchen counter, and that's the end. Not the way I wanted to go. Too rich or too poor, too much love or not enough, not doing what they want to do with their whole life is work and they're miserable. Can't have a baby or can't get rid of the 25-year-old kid living in the guest room. Mostly nobody wants to talk about the heart of the matter, which is we often don't know why we're alive. It's tough. If you don't have any sense of mission or destiny, or religious faith, or really any sort of sustainable lifetime philosophy, then the small stuff is all you can think about. Because no matter where you are in life, at one time or another, you are going to have all the usual problems. Health, money, sorrow, disgust, anger, gum disease, athlete's foot, too much house, or none at all. Your dog either up and died, or it's neurotic and full of hate and will outlive you by decades. Everybody's out to get you, and nobody pays any attention at all. The entirety of modern technological society is brushed away and marginalized the personal practice of philosophy. So we lose the plot while we're in it. It's like one of those Disney Star Wars movies. And yet, the one person on Earth pretty much everybody can agree was a wise philosopher, the Buddha, made a list of 5 things that everybody should remember and think about on a regular basis. 5 things. You can use one hand to count the 5 and the other to make sure you don't lose track. It is my nature to grow old. I cannot avoid old age. It is my nature to have ill health. I can't avoid ill health. It is my nature to die. I can't avoid death. I will be separated from all I love. I cannot avoid separation from the people and things I love. And finally, that's your thumb, if you count that way. My deeds are my only possessions. What I do is what I am. That's it. A video gamer could remember that. With practice. But it's not morbid either. It's plain, it's pointed. And by the time you're old enough to need this kind of assistance, I can guarantee you it's not hypothetical. And it's relaxing, really. They didn't give you that dog you wanted down at the shelter. Your offer got rejected on the one house within 100 miles that you could conceivably afford. Well, them's the breaks. Now, one day, not too long from now, it won't matter anyway. You don't need to be a Buddhist, whatever that is. It's just common sense, a helpful reminder that all things must pass. You don't need to pick one philosophy and stay with it for life. You just need a philosophy to get you from place to place in life. If it turns out to be the same one all the way, if Stoicism or Catholicism or Socialism gets you through the nights that you have left, then lucky you. If cryptocurrency keeps you interested in getting up in the morning for a couple of years, that's great. Please mine your cryptocurrency responsibly. And if your childhood interest in Star Wars is still hanging on, 30s or 40s, well, if it gives you a reason to get up in the morning, may whatever it is be with you. Maybe Yoda will lead you to Zen Buddhism, because it doesn't matter how you get there. And if you're lucky, your approach to life will provide you with some sort of community, or at least some sort of effective system. And it all depends on what you're looking for. I found that setting things up so I don't have to see people very often makes life especially tolerable, with the important bonus of making the time I do spend with people very enjoyable. In small doses. And moderation. Moderation is a good long-term strategy, even if it's an especially boring strategy in the short term. When Leonard Cohen was pushing 80 years old, somebody asked him if his approach to work had changed. I never had an approach, he said. I was always like a bear in a honey tree, just trying to get something without getting stung to death. Little moments of transcendence are generally enough to get any of us through all the dull trudging along in between. If I'm wandering around the desert or the mountains or the rivers by myself on a daily basis, I am much more likely to come across things that delight the soul. I found a place to walk around without any other people today, earlier today, right here in Moab, and I'm not telling you where. And probably the best brain-clearing moment was as I sat under a juniper to get a little shade at midday. I heard the goofiest sounding bird. And it flew goofily past me, and that was really the highlight. It sounded like a minion jay, but I could not see it too well with the sun in my eyes. And I found myself merrily walking down the ridge, wondering how often minion jays are seen alone. Because there's usually 100 of the little noisemakers. Although I occasionally see one by its lonesome. And a moment like that can erase hours of annoyance from all the rental RVs clogging up the highways. But of course, if you get off the highway, then you don't need to worry about the rental RV doing 40 in the 65 zone with its turn signal blinking for 100 miles. Oh, well, at least they know what turn signals are. Maybe. This is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting tonight live from the studios of KZMU-FM in Moab, Utah, and the Castle Valley. And that was John Gottschalk playing the guitar. Oh, we've got Sarah Mead engineering.
It is spring now, officially. So if you're in the lower part of Arizona, or Anza Borrego, or Big Bend, happy summer. Happy 6 month long summer. You know, a pinion jay knows why it's alive. It's alive to eat pinion nuts and somehow make pinion jay eggs. The rest is easy. Especially with 150 other pinion jays doing your thinking for you. It's like people who move out here from the Midwest. A lot of people move out from the Midwest because winter keeps them housebound for half the year. So then they move to Mesa, Arizona, or wherever to be housebound for the other half of the year. Americans are people of extremes. And it's already missing tourist season in the Mojave High Desert. I was walking down this wash a week or so back when a deputy drove up behind me, got out, told me a woman was missing. Keep my eyes open. When I got up to the top of the hill about an hour later, I found this newish luxury SUV parked ass backwards and literally on top of a 3-foot-tall Joshua tree. The tread marks on the dirt roadway were just insane. I guess you'd call it a 12-point turn. The car windows were all rolled down. I could not see any footprints around. If there were footprints, the equally large Sheriff's Department SUVs had obliterated them. Now, the funny thing, I guess it's funny. That same night, I saw on the local online social media network that somebody had been missing in that same spot. But this person was 30 years older than the person I was told about, and different in every way, as far as appearance and all that. And it was just one of those things. I guess the actual missing person has been found. And other than being a bit dehydrated and lost, she's all right. I don't even know if the other person exists. When you routinely walk for miles every day in various spots far enough away from houses and trailheads and cell service to get a little bit of peace, something you find yourself watching out for is evidence of people who made a mistake. Maybe the mistake is a crime, as in the piles of household garbage and furnishings and illegally chopped down yucca trees people like to dump out in the desert. Or the abandoned stolen cars, sometimes bogged down in a sandy wash. And sometimes there's only a hint of evidence, often many years old. A shoe, a pair of pants. And then you can only sort of wonder, what happened here? One thing I rarely wonder about, though, is whether there's something dead nearby. Because my dog will come back with a piece of it, no matter how long that mule deer leg or coyote jaw has been out there half buried. Sort of makes me want to reach for my Bible. Thou shalt not dread of an arrow flying in the day of a goblin going in darkness. That's how the Wycliffe Bible translates what we now call Psalm 91, verses 5 and 6. One of the earlier translations into English from the 14th century. Goblin is a beautiful word which has come back into fashion lately as various questionable people have bragged about going into goblin mode. It's one of those words just filled with resonance, with meaning, just the very sound of it. Which makes sense being part of the spoken language, as most words are, long before anyone thought to write it down. The Middle English word comes from the Old Norman French, goblin, with an E between the B and the L. And there's a medieval Latin version that shows up around the same time, written down in the 12th century by a monk to describe a certain terrible spirit haunting a town in Normandy. A town that was established by at least the 4th century and named for the Gallic tribe that called the region home back when Julius Caesar invaded. The monk was named... Oh, what was he named? Ordericus Vitalis. A historian born in England in the year of 1075 during the first decade of Norman rule. His birth name was Orderic. His first language was English. When his parents sent him off to Normandy at age 10, he spoke not a word of French. But he grew to thrive in the abbey, and he's remembered today as the greatest historian of 11th and 12th century England and France, and also as the first person to write down the word goblin. He was also the first to write down a ghost story. in Europe anyway. So it stands to reason that he would be the first person to write down the word goblin to describe this malicious spirit entity. Speaking of the demonic, here's something I read in this book I've had sitting around for a couple of years, but I finally picked it up a couple of weeks ago. Too much of our recent history has been soul slaughter, imagining the past as merely primitive, muscle-bound with technology, bulldozing the sacred places, hunting the demonic animals with high-velocity rifles, dispatching the jets to shoot down the UFOs, violating the moon goddess with phallic rockets, and so on. Having severed all connection with the gods and demons, we reckon we are getting away with it, but we are not. The victory over the demons is hollow. We simply make a hell of our own world. That's from Demonic Reality by Patrick Harper. Isaacs and Moab to the Castle Valley and a whole lot of desert in between. This is Desert Oracle Radio, and I am your host, Ken Lane, with soundscapes composed and performed by our own Red, Blue, Black, Silver in Joshua Tree. It was a real springtime treat to come out to Utah for the Epicenter Conference in Green River. For tonight's 30th anniversary celebration of community radio station KZMU-FM. Thanks to Sarah Mead for inviting me to both, and for all the good people who journeyed up to the river for our campfire stories the other night. And thanks to everybody who listens to this show out there in Slick Rock Country. That Epicenter Conference, by the way, was all about home, making your home in these little towns surrounded by wilderness. It's a great way to live, especially if you put in the effort to make it work with the people who already live in the place, and the animals, of course. Like the pronghorn I got to see a couple of times just this week. Some babies, too. You know, we used to have pronghorn all over the Mojave Desert. That's where the name Antelope Valley comes from. You can find us online at desertoracle.com/radio, or just desertoracle.com, where you can also find back issues of our occasional journal and support the show however you like. We sure do appreciate it. Our Desert Oracle Volume 1 paperback is available at bookstores everywhere, especially in the American Southwest. I was going to check the book section in the Arches National Park Visitor Center, but the line to get in was too long. Oh, well. Enjoy this beautiful springtime. Enjoy the beautiful desert dandelions popping up everywhere now. And thanks for listening. Good night from the Voice of the Desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, at 95.9 FM, and streaming at kgvm.org. Well, let's have a little bit of nature readings and seasonal readings from Nature One Day at a Time by Kathy Katz for August 10th. Her topic is slugs. She writes, "Slugs with no shell to cover their sensitive bodies are vulnerable to the sun's drying rays. To avoid daylight, they emerge and forage for food only in the safety of night. Hormonal levels change during their 24-hour cycle, just as humans' hormone and temperature levels rise and fall according to their biological schedules. For some humans with biological clocks out of sync with a day schedule, wake-up calls are obviously difficult. Complaints from night people, insomniacs, new parents, light sleepers, and nappers illustrate the lifelong struggle to adjust to an unnatural cycle. Alarm clock awakenings for night people, when our hormone levels are peaking for deepest sleep, are no less difficult than requiring us to stop a speeding train by standing in front of it. Sometimes even the anticipation of oncoming pain clouds the pleasure of sleep." And then she closes this one with a quote from Perrette's Lavi in The Enchanted World of Sleep. And Perrette writes, "Three forms of adjustment to Earth's rotation developed during the evolutionary process. That of nocturnal animals, whose activity begins with the setting of the sun. That of daylight animals, who come to life at sunrise. And that of animals who are active twice a day. It is quite amazing that recognition of the importance of biological clocks took such a long time." I hope you are in sync with your biological clock. Life would be a little easier for you. Okay, we're going to go on to August 11th. She writes, "Slugs are mollusks, one of the first forms of animal life to live on land. In Spanish, slugs are called babosas, from the verb meaning to drool. Slime secreted from a gland under the slug's head flows down to a muscular foot and allows them to glide over surfaces as they travel. A shiny trail of mucus on sidewalks and roads is a good indication that a slug has traveled down that path. Their slime not only protects the slugs from cuts and wounds, it also gives them protection from diseases. Scientists have discovered medicinal benefits for humans from slug slime for mucus-related diseases such as cystic fibrosis." And then she closes with a quote from Linda Hogan in First People from Intimate Nature. And Linda writes, "What we are now learning about animals returns us to a world so powerfully beyond our contemporary imaginations that we have almost missed it." I love that. Next up, we've got a couple of daily observations, Thoreau on the Days of the Year, edited by Steve Grant. On August 10th, 1856, Thoreau wrote, "I go across lots like a hunting dog. With what tireless energy and abandonment they dash through the brush and up the sides of hills. I meet two white foxhounds led by an old red one. How full of it they are. How their tails work. They are not tied to paths. They burst forth from the thickest shrub oak lot and immediately dive into another, as the fox did." And on August 11th, 1853, Thoreau wrote, "There are berries which men do not use like choke berries. which here in Hubbard Swamp grow in great profusion and blacken the bushes. How much richer we feel for this unused abundance and superfluity. Nature would not appear so rich, the profusion so rich, if we knew a use for everything. That's something to think about. Yep. And now I think let's start talking about the night skies around here. This information is coming from space.com. This is an article written by Anthony Wood, and he's talking about the Perseids meteor shower that peaks August 12th and 13th. He writes, "The Perseids are one of the most visually spectacular meteor showers of the year and are known for spawning impressive fireballs that light up the night sky. So get ready, stargazers. The Perseid meteor shower peaks August 12th to 13th, bringing up to 100 shooting stars per hour, along with the potential for dazzling fireballs. The Perseid meteor shower occurs each year as Earth barrels through the trail of ancient debris shed by Comet 109P / Swift Tuttle. These cometary fragments, often no larger than a grain of sand, collide with Earth's atmosphere at speeds of up to 37 miles per second. The resulting friction swiftly vaporizes the debris, creating the bright flashes that we see as fiery shooting stars. Perseid meteors are known for the long wakes that they leave behind as they blaze through the sky. The shower is also famous for producing dramatic fireballs, unusually bright meteors that can outshine even the brightest planets. This year's spectacle comes with one major caveat, moonlight. The 80% illuminated waning gibbous moon will rise a few hours before midnight on August 12th and remain high above the southern horizon until dawn, washing out all but the brightest meteors. Despite the moonlight, the Perseids could still put on a nice show. They will appear to emanate from a point of origin known as a radiant, located near the star Eta Persei in the constellation Perseus, which climbs high in the summer sky in the hours leading up to dawn around this time of year. Those new to stargazing can find the constellation with the help of a smartphone astronomy app, many of which make use of augmented reality technology to help pinpoint the precise locations of specific stars. Perseids are best viewed in the hours preceding dawn on August 13th, when the radiant is at its highest in the northeastern night sky, though it's possible to spot meteors belonging to the shower as early as 10 p.m. local time. You can maximize your chances of seeing meteors with the longest tails by allowing your night vision to adjust in a dark sky location for 30 minutes and gazing approximately 40 degrees above the radiant relative to the horizon. Remember, the width of your clenched fist held at arm's length against the night sky accounts for about 10 degrees. And then I also have a little update. In one of our earlier shows, I toured the Madison Valley Museum and talked about what they call the Beast, which is taxidermied and displayed there. And recently, as my husband and I traveled down towards the Tetons, I came across the July 31st, 2025 issue of the Madisonian News with an article by Maddie Bishop. And here's the article. The headline is, "Photo of a creature resembling the Beast of Madison Valley taken near Billings." And then under the title it says, "A Billings woman has presented the Madison County History Association with a photo she took of a creature that looks like the mysterious beast of Madison Valley on display at the Madison Valley History Museum." And then the article begins, On July 23rd, Debbie Dietz of Billings, Montana, arrived with a friend at the Madison Valley History Museum with a photo that she took on the back roads of Montana to see if it could be the same type of creature as the mysterious beast that was shot by I.A. Hutchins in 1886 near what is now Ennis. Hutchins shot the creature, which resembles a wolf, because it was tormenting the local ranchers with its terrible cries and feeding on livestock, according to the memoirs of his son, Elliot J. Hutchins. After shooting the creature, Hutchins transferred it to a Mr. Sherman of Henry Lake, who mounted it and kept it in a collection of mounted animals. He also sent a detailed description of the creature to the Smithsonian, but according to the memoir, they were unable to identify the beast. The taxidermied beast was thought lost for much of its history. Sherman had given the beast to the Idaho Museum of Natural History, where it was on display in Pocatello, Idaho. And in 2007, a grandson of Hutchins named Jack Kirby found the piece and negotiated to have it returned to the Madison Valley History Museum, where it has become one of the featured attractions. Dietz, who fancies herself an amateur photographer, captured the image with a 200mm zoom on her Canon camera. She wasn't able to get close enough to identify the creature, but just like the beast, the creature looked similar to a wolf, but with features common to a hyena, including a sloped neck, and in the case of the beast, a faint hint of stripes in the dark fur. After taking the picture, Dietz posted it to the Meet Me in Montana Facebook group she runs, and another woman said that she saw a similar creature just north of Laurel. "I didn't know anything about the beast," said Dietz. The photo went viral with hundreds of comments. One of them mentioned Shunka Warakin. I Googled that name, and in a few of the articles, the mysterious creature beast was mentioned. And I saw the picture of it in the showcase in the Madison Valley History Museum. And then it goes on. Shunka Warakin is a creature from Native American tradition that is described as having the appearance of a hyena. It is said to have preyed on dogs, and the name in the Lowe language means carries off dogs. While the creature in the photo and the beast resemble a wolf, they more closely resemble each other, and they fit the description of Shunka Warakin. Explanations over the years for the odd appearance of the beast have ranged from the possibility of a hyena escaping from a traveling circus and breeding with a wolf to a hybrid anomaly or just a case of bad taxidermy. Kirby has decided not to have a DNA test done on the creature to keep the mystery alive. In May of 2018, a similar-looking creature was shot on a ranch outside of Denton, Montana. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks took pictures of the wolf-like creature that bore unusual features similar to the beast and puzzled wildlife experts while igniting the imaginations of local residents. FWP sent the animal in for DNA testing, and much to the dismay of the more imaginative in the community, the results showed that it was a gray wolf. Even if the gray wolf is the likely explanation for the beast and Dietz's creature she photographed, Kirby did Curious Minds and the Madison Valley History Museum a favor by choosing to keep the mystery alive. Dietz will likely never know if her photo is of a wolf or a descendant of the beast, or Shunka Warakin. For museum volunteer Jim Snyder, the mystery has always been part of the attraction of the beast. My first memory of the museum is of the beast, said Schneider. I was here last week when National Geographic or someone called and wanted to do another story on it. The mystery of the beast continues to attract interest from all over the world. You can see the beast for yourself between 1 and 4 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday, along with a wide variety of artifacts and stories of the people of the Madison Valley through the years. More information about the museum is available at www.MadisonValleyHistoryAssociation.org. So, there you go. That's our little update of, what would you call it? The unexplained, the questionable, the the mysterious. Anyway, I love those things, and you know I do. I hope you liked it too. Well, now it's time for some events that are coming up that I wanted to tell you about. On Saturday, August 16th, there is Huckleberry Ecology with Maria Mantis. And now this is up in Swan Valley. Take a hike in the Swan Range to observe and discuss the ecology of Vaccinium globular, or is it V. membranosium? We can talk about taxonomy too. Bring a container, location to be announced. Call Maria for details at 406-407-2045. And that is a lovely part of Montana, I gotta tell you. If you want to take a little road trip, it's well worth it. And then from our local Valley of Flowers chapter of Montana Native Plant Society, they say, mark your calendar and plan to join fellow plant enthusiasts for the annual late summer potluck picnic of the Valley of Flowers chapter, Montana Native Plant Society. This will be our official kickoff to start planning for the 2026 Montana Native Plant Society annual meeting, which we'll be hosting next June. It's none too soon to begin brainstorming. Bring your ideas. We'll get together on Sunday, August 17th, 6 o'clock p.m. at the Beale Park Pavilion, 415 North Black Avenue in Bozeman. Sparkling water, wine, and beer will be provided. Please bring a main dish, side, or dessert to share, plus your own eating gear. Questions? Contact Gretchen Rupp at 406-451-1860. My thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks all the volunteers and supporters of KGBM. Thank you, Anthony Wood and Space.com, Steve Grant and Kathy Katz for our nature readings from their books, the Madisonian News and Maddie Bishop, and thank you for listening. If you have a story you'd like to share, you can leave me a voicemail or text at 406-404-6246. I would just love to have a co-host at least once in a while, or just somebody to tell a story and chat a little bit on the show. It would be fun. This program broadcasts on the air at 95.9 FM. Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, watch the sky, keep doing good things, stay well, and sweet dreams. See you next week.